I'm not a hero. I'm not a traitor. I'm an ordinary American. You know, I'm a citizen like anybody else in the room, and I'm just trying to do the best that I can.
Coming up on Philosophy Talk,
the ethics of whistleblowing with our guest, former NSA contractor Edward Snowden.
When you basically are requiring individuals to report wrongdoing to those responsible for the wrongdoing, that's kind of like asking the lamb to beg pardon from the lion.
Who gets to decide whether government secrets should be revealed to the public?
Aren't whistleblowers the last defense against government overreach?
Whistleblowers are elected by circumstance. You know, nobody self-nominates to be a whistleblower because it's so painful.
Is whistleblowing a matter of duty or a matter of choice?
Aren't some bad acts best kept secret?
When legality and morality begin to separate, we all have a moral obligation to act to do something about that.
The Ethics of Whistleblowing with Edward Snowden, coming up on Philosophy Talk. Welcome to Philosophy Talk, the program that questions everything.
Except your intelligence. I'm John Perry.
And I'm Ken Taylor. We're coming to you from the Cubberley Auditorium on the Stanford University campus as part of the Distinguished Speaker Series of the Symbolic Systems Program.
Our conversations begin just a stone's throw from here over at Philosopher's Corner. That's where Ken teaches philosophy, and I taught philosophy for 40 joyful years.
Welcome, everyone, to Philosophy Talk. Today, we're thinking about the ethics of whistleblowing with Edward Snowden, one of the world's most famous whistleblowers.
Well, Ken, I mean, I'll tell you my view. Whistleblowers do us all a great service. They shine the light of truth into the dark corners where governments and corporations operate and hide their dirty secrets. Although they're often hounded by the law, to me, they're among the heroes of democracy.
You know, John, many things that governments and corporations do in the shadows, as you put it aptly, they do deserve to be exposed. But really now, we can't have solitary individuals deciding for themselves which government secrets to keep and which ones to leak. That's a recipe for chaos.
So you'd rather just see the government have the right to engage in massive, warrantless secret surveillance of ordinary citizens like you and me and the people in this audience without adequate oversight or input from a public? That's a recipe for a police state, unchecked by anything except its own whims.
Well, now you're alluding to the Patriot Act and the NSA surveillance program that it's supposedly authorized. Highly controversial, I admit. Even as we speak, Congress is hotly debating whether to reauthorize it or to let it expire.
Thanks largely to the courage and self-sacrifice of Edward Snowden.
My point was, as flawed as the Patriot Act may be, there's one thing you have to say for it, John.
And that would be?
It's the law. Voted on by both houses of Congress, signed by the president, who, last time I checked, were all actually empowered by the public, through elections, to make laws on behalf of us all. And as the law, John, as the law, you have to respect it. It deserves respect.
Not if it's ill-conceived and unjust. Not if it's so opaque that even supporters don't really know what it means. I mean, Dianne Feinstein, she's a good senator, a good person. She thought she was on top of this, but it was obvious after the Snowden leaks, she didn't know what metadata was. She didn't know what she was involved with at all. It doesn't deserve respect if it's cynically used as a pretext for doing things in secret that the people, the ultimate masters in a democracy, would never stand for if they actually knew about it.
Look, there's one thing you left out in your little tirade, though, John, speaking of democracy. The importance of respect for the rule of law. Without that, you don't have democracy. You've got anarchy.
Well, Ken, you're confusing respect for the law with a fetish for following the law, even when it makes you do wrong things. Sometimes you just have to stand up and be counted. You have to challenge the law.
I don't deny that. Who would deny that? But you should challenge the law Through lawful means.
Well, what if the very act of challenging it has been made unlawful? If the law has sworn you to secrecy on pain of prosecution, what if that fact cows everyone in the system into silence? What do you do then? Shut up and just become another cog in the machine?
That's not what I'm saying. Look, I'm a law-abiding citizen. I respect the law. I want to be inside the law. But I don't, frankly, want to be a person who simply goes along to get along. I've never thought of myself as that.
Well, you're now showing signs of beginning to appreciate the dilemma that many whistleblowers have actually faced. Most of these whistleblowers are patriots, not radical revolutionaries. That's why they got in on the inside in the first place. They thought they were doing something worthwhile. They would love to work within the law, within the system, but sometimes, given what they see, they simply can't. And it takes great moral courage to out the very government whose secrets you've sworn to uphold. Sometimes a higher duty calls.
Yeah, but what if this well-intentioned whistleblower listening to the higher duty ends up doing great damage to the country he professes to love? How can someone be so cocksure that he's doing the right thing, especially when the law forbids it, and when peers and superiors, also working in the trenches on the inside, refuse to see things the same way? How about that, John?
Well, Ken, that's the risk involved in being courageous. You're a traitor if you get it wrong. You're a hero if you get it right. Whistleblowing is not for the faint of heart. But let me ask you, what would you do if you discovered that the government had targeted you for surveillance?
To answer that question, we sent our roving philosophical reporter, Shuka Kalantari, to interview an innocent person who was targeted by the FBI. She files this report.
It's March 2010. A young college student named Yasser Afifi is at the auto shop. He's getting a routine oil change. But when the mechanic looks under the car, he finds a GPS tracking device. A few days later, Yasser notices two shady-looking people hanging out near his car. More than a little paranoid at this point, he goes outside to confront them.
And I'm being 19, and I'm puffing up my chest, like, what's going on? What's happening? And that's where I guess it all begins, really, where I'm finally face-to-face with two FBI agents.
The agents told Yasser they'd put the tracking device on his car, and now they wanted it back. They also wanted to ask Yasser a few questions. Really detailed questions.
In a very short period of time, I realized they knew my whereabouts, they knew where I was going, who I was hanging out with, what restaurants I was going to. They knew I got a new job, and they couldn't have known that information unless if they had listened in on phone calls and reviewed my emails. I found that very shocking.
That's why in 2011, Yasser decided to sue the FBI.
We alleged that his Fourth Amendment rights were violated because there was no warrant for the GPS tracking device that was used.
Zahra Bilu is with the Council on American Islamic Relations, a Muslim advocacy group. She's Yasser's lawyer. Bilu says Muslim Americans like Yasser have been fighting against unwarranted government surveillance pretty much since 9/11, but it's a fight that was largely unnoticed until Edward Snowden.
He's an American former CIA employee and computer technician. Today he came out as the leaker of classified NSA documents that spell out a secret surveillance program.
The Snowden leak made these issues more relatable to our fellow Americans. It's sad that it took surveillance on all Americans for all Americans to care, but I think we're by nature self-interested. Snowden showed us that we are all impacted by this. And so the self-interest has shifted and people care now.
After the leak, Bilu's team joined other advocacy groups to sue the NSA for its cell phone surveillance program. I asked Bilu, isn't there a chance the government is listening to us right now? I mean, she is the head of a Muslim American advocacy group.
They possibly are. And I operate from the perspective that it's better to assume that they are and not say anything I wouldn't want them to hear than to be surprised that they were listening. It's unfortunate, it's a frightening way to live.
Yasser Afifi, the guy who found the FBI tracking device on his car, says the same thing.
I feel like I'm still being watched. I feel like my every move is documented, and I feel like I would be naive not to believe that. And again, if that's how I feel, what does that mean for the rest of everyone else?
Today, Yasser is married with three kids. He works at a marketing agency, and his wife is a yoga instructor. Even though it's been 5 years since he found the FBI tracking device on his car, the awareness, the amount of attention his case received, still ripples across the nation.
It ripples through books, it ripples through authors and voices and radios, and we're talking about it 5 years later, you and I. People are listening to this because this is a problem, this is a growing concern.
In the spring of 2015, Yasser's case against the FBI was dismissed. One of the reasons cited was that Yasser, quote, contacted local and national media to share his story. But Yasser is glad he shared. He says losing the lawsuit doesn't matter. If his personal story can help people learn how to assert their own rights and protect themselves from being violated by government agencies, then he's won where it matters the most. For Philosophy Talk, I'm Shuka Kantari.
To hear the rest of this program, head to philosophytalk.org. Thank you for listening.
And thank you for thinking.